What's up, everybody? It's Sophia, pronouns she, her, from Miami, Florida, and I'm here introducing episode 3 of the Student Voice podcast. And our topic for today is women's history and voter suppression.
Hi, I'm Natasha. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm from Tucson, Arizona.
Hey, I'm Anissa. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona, and my pronouns are she, her.
Yeah, so today's episode is obviously centered around feminism. So I think we all know, but the definition of feminism that we all personally believe in is that a feminist is somebody who believes in equity for all genders intersectionally and the deconstruction of the patriarchy and gender roles and all of that. And we just want to preface that because, there's a lot of feminism out there that is not intersectional or is not directed in the right way. And we believe in feminism that is uplifting to everyone.
Another key term that you'll be hearing throughout this episode, or key terms rather, are suffragette and suffragist. So I want to go ahead and talk about the difference between them. So the term suffragette did not appear until 1906 when the Daily Mail, which is a British newspaper, used the word suffragette in a derogatory manner to distinguish between suffragists who were militant and those who were not. So I think that's a pretty important distinction to make. Just really highlighting the fact that suffragette was used in a derogatory manner. So now I'm going to get into a bit of a brief history lesson on women's suffrage and voter suppression against women that continues to today. So to start off, in 1920, white women gained the right to vote with the passage of the 19th Amendment. And then in 1924, Native American women gained the right to vote, and in 1965, Latinx and Black women gained the right to vote with the Voting Rights Act. So, even though the 15th Amendment guaranteed African American the right to vote, Southern states imposed barriers to prevent them from voting, and those barriers include literacy tests, telling them they were at the wrong polling place, and telling them that their application had incorrect information. And this came to a stop in 1965 with the Voting Rights Act that I referenced earlier. And that gave women of color, all people of color really, the ability to vote by preventing voter discrimination on the state and local levels. And specifically, it banned literacy tests, which were a huge barrier preventing both men and women of color from voting. We would love to think that voter suppression ended in 1965. Oh, what a lovely end to the story that would be. But unfortunately, that is not the case. So, this past August 18th, in 2020, we celebrated 100 years since the passage of the 19th Amendment. But as I said, unfortunately, there are still barriers to women voting today. So, the Voting Rights Act was gutted by Shelby County versus Holder, which was a Supreme Court case that happened in 2013. And it basically allowed for states and localities to handle their voting processes without federal approval. So, one of the most important implications of that is that voter identification laws became legal when states or localities deem them legal. And voter ID laws specifically target women. Because women who change their names when they get married, which is approximately 90% of married women, have different names on their IDs and on their birth certificates. And this results in an estimate of 34% of women having the potential of being turned away for this. And this is just one of multiple unresolved issues that prevent women from voting. And part of that list is long lines, early closing times, and malfunctioning machinery. Malfunctioning machinery is something that we saw in the recent Georgia runoffs this past January. And yeah, so that is the conclusion of our brief history lesson that basically goes into why women are still the subjects of voter suppression, and there's still a lot of work that we need to do in order to ensure that women achieve equality, both politically and socially.
I really like that you touched on that, Sophia, because I feel like there's a lot of ignorance that comes to like these conversations. Like people are like, well, 1965 happened and like we're all equal now, we can all vote. But then it's But then, like, people tend to forget that these things still occur today, no matter, like, what laws were passed, like, we're still experiencing things today. So, as with all conversations in America, we always forget people of color. So I think it's important to talk about the lack of intersectionality, especially in the feminist movement when it came to Black women. Because we tend to only talk about white suffragists like Susan B. Anthony, and we forget about Black women like Ida B. Wells, Sojourner Truth, and Mae Church Terrell, who also worked towards women's rights while experiencing racism, which made it harder for them. And even today, when it comes to things like misogyny noir, Black women are subjected to a lot more when it comes to colorism, racism, misogyny, all of that. But a really good speech that I enjoy is Ain't I a Woman by Sojourner Truth, which she delivered in 1851 at the Women's Rights Convention. It kind of talks about how Black women should still be considered women. And Sojourner Truth talks about her experiences that make her a woman, but because of racism, she's not considered a woman.
Yes, Anissa, and that is a huge issue, how women of color have been left out of the feminist movement. And I think that we also need to address how queer women, specifically trans women, have been left out as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think there needs to be a lot more support for trans women, and especially trans women of color. I think it's just really arbitrary to talk about feminism without talking about Black trans women and the violence that occurs towards them. Because if we want to talk about oppressed femininity and oppression based on appearance and the, you know, just violence against women, you can't talk about that without talking about the women who experience it the most, who happen to be Black trans women and Indigenous women as well. I think a lot of feminist conversations could be about something more meaningful, but they're made to be arbitrary by a lack of intersectionality. For example, the kind of leg shaving debate of, is it feminist to shave your legs or not? Or is it feminist to wear makeup or not? And really these conversations are so arbitrary because it's really just, it could be about something bigger, but it's just asking the wrong question, because the question shouldn't be, is it feminist for you to shave your legs? It should be, why do you feel pressured to do so? Because originally that does stem from racism and negative stereotypes about women, primarily women of color, who have body hair. And, you know, all of these things, we could be talking about something more meaningful. And, you know, if we're going to talk about the pressure on women to get plastic surgery, for example, we need to talk about how that pressure applies to trans women who feel the need to, you know, I mean, obviously trans women and women in general should make whatever choices they want, but trans women who feel the need to have these procedures that aren't even often covered by their health insurance in order to just feel safe, or for employers to respect them, or anything else. Like, we could be turning these conversations into something much bigger. And I think that a lack of intersectionality just really hurts that.
Exactly. And in addition, I think by entertaining these kind of ridiculous, honestly, conversations, we're distracting from what feminism is really about. We're, you know, by saying what women should do and women shouldn't do, how are we any better than the patriarchy? Isn't the whole point of feminism to empower women and for them to be able to have a choice and for them to be able to express themselves however they see fit?
I completely agree. I think there's actually a lot of misogyny that backs what a lot of exclusionary feminists are saying, especially TERFs, trans exclusionary radical feminists, you know, in particular, who will use essentially just misogyny in order to back their transphobia, and just saying, well, trans women will never experience what it's like to have blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you're really just reducing women to the bodies that some of them have. And it's just, if you have to use misogyny in order to further your feminism, it's not feminism. It's just putting restrictions on the women that you're supposedly trying to help.
Snaps to that.
Just to add on with, like, certain women, like, having ideals of how a woman should look. I think that, like, on social media, especially, like, TikTok And like a lot of women will be like feminist and say, oh, girls support girls. But when they see another woman who doesn't fit their idea of what a woman should look like, based on like physical appearance and like maybe how they act, it's like, oh, we're going to make fun of you now. But like, whatever happened to girls support girls, like, that's why we're feminists.
Yeah. And also, I think it's important to note that conventional, like, issues that are conventionally viewed as women's issues aren't always held by women or aren't always experienced by women. And also, not all women face these issues. So I think that, you know, being a feminist is being inclusive and including trans women and speaking on their behalf and really just advocating for equality as we have pledged to do.
Yes, it's so important to notice the differences in women. Like, we're not a monolith, we're all different.
I completely agree. And I think, you know, like, there are so many issues with various women that we, you know, when I talk to other women that I don't experience, even if in certain marginalizations or lack thereof, I'm similar to them. And I also think that there are ways that we relate to each other and we can, you know, understand those common experiences. I watched a YouTube video a few weeks ago. It's by Samantha Lux. I love her. But she was reacting to a transphobe who was mocking her video, essentially, and talking about how she's not a real woman and blah, 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 quote unquote. And it just made me think that everything that she was talking about that was supposed to, in her mind, the transphobe that she was trying to use to say that Samantha wasn't, quote unquote, a real woman, were actually things that are really common for a lot of women to experience. Now, that's not to say that cis women experience what it is like to be a trans woman in any way or experience that oppression, but just in the similar experiences that Samantha in particular was talking about, like, you know, feeling like she doesn't measure up to conventional beauty standards and wondering if something is wrong with her body because there's no sex education on it. And, you know, the feeling sad that she'll never be able to get pregnant or have a baby. These are things that I know a lot of cis women who experience, and in a lot of ways we can relate on these things and lift each other up. And it's just ridiculous that there are people trying to tear other women down, even when we have so many shared experiences to uplift each other.
That was a really amazing point.
Yeah, so I think that really what we need to all do is, I mean, I think dealing with our own internalized misogyny, I'm just going to say that first and foremost, dealing with your own internalized misogyny, your own internalized, you know, homophobia, internalized whatever, it always needs to happen in any feminist movement, because so much of this hating on other women or hating on other queer people or whatever, I'm not going to speak to issues that don't affect me, I feel like so much of it comes from internalized stuff. So I think that looking within ourselves and then listening to other women who have different experiences from us. What do you guys think? How else can we make the movement more intersectional?
If you listened to our last episode on cancel culture, you know that I am huge on empathy. And I think that if we all practice just a little more empathy every day, we can really make changes, like see some amazing changes in our society. So I think, like, to go off of what Natasha was saying, if we just listen to other women who have experiences that are different than ours, and we show empathy and understanding and a desire to change and to do better, we can really, as I said before, we can make some big changes.
Another thing we need to do is just be mindful of the language that we use. Like Natasha's point earlier about how, like, not all women can have children, like, just because one woman can't doesn't make her any less of a woman. So we do need to be mindful of the language that we use when we talk about feminism.
And on women's issues, or as I was talking about earlier, issues that are conventionally seen as women's issues, like not all people who menstruate are women and not all women menstruate. And from there, I'm going to go into a couple ways that we can all help combat voter suppression against women. So the first thing that we can do is support our U.S. Postal Service. So something that you can do as an individual is call your representatives and ask them to support increased drop box locations in your area and to support a bill that would provide the USPS with funding that it desperately needs. This is super important so that way we can get more mail-in ballots. A lot of women have to work and they are unable to make it to the polls for the reasons I discussed earlier, long lines, other complications. So by supporting the US Postal Service, you are helping women vote. Another way to help the Postal Service is to buy merchandise. Believe it or not, the Postal Service actually does sell merchandise. So if you want to look that up, we can include a link in the description so that way you can find the merchandise. Another thing you can do is follow and support accounts like the League of Women Voters and ACLU on social media because they are actively combating women's voter suppression. So by supporting these organizations, once again, you are helping women vote and you are helping them get representation in their communities so that way we can all rise up.
Well, that's all we have for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed our episode on women's history and voter suppression. Happy Women's History Month.
Thank you for tuning in, everybody, and we'll see you soon here on the Student Voice Podcast. Bye.
Bye.